Pass the gravy. It's the second Thanksgiving spectacular episode of Hidden Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and tonight I've gathered past guests from season one, violist Ivo Bokulik and trumpeter Ari Mishik. Not only will I be catching up with them and how they are adjusting to a new normal during the pandemic, but we also will be discussing life as an entrepreneur and freelancer in classical music, specifically located in the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome, everyone. How are you guys doing?
Hey, great to be here.
Hello. Excellent.
Happy Thanksgiving. I've got some cranberry sauce and my turkey leg here.
Oh, really? Nice. I'm glad you came prepared. So just as a reminder, Ivo's episode was titled Ivo Bokulik, Sad Pants. Mm. And Ari's episode was titled Ari Mishik, Trumpeter, Trumpetist, Trumpeteer, Trumpetista.
Which, all of the
yes, above. Which I think your episode title is the top of the most punctuation in a title ever.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Good. That's what I'm all
exactly.
about.
Exactly. All yeah. the punctuation. So congratulations.
Thank you. That feels good.
Okay. So in preparation for this episode, I sent you guys little gift boxes with apples from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yes, did you guys enjoy it?
Good.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I went apple picking and I thought, you know, I should give some to my San Francisco buddies. You know, I feel like in Minnesota, the apples here are just like so good. And
That sounds like a really like Minnesota, like Midwest. Yeah. You probably went to like a little
I
orchard.
Did. Yeah.
Did you ride around on hay?
There was a hay ride, but I decided to walk instead of doing the hay ride.
All right. Yep. By your own power.
I went to the app. Yes, that's exactly what I did.
Perfect.
So I gave you guys little small apples from an orchard in Minnesota. I also gave you guys little gourds or little pumpkins as sort of festive things.
Yes.
And I also gave you guys some hand sanitizer courtesy of Hidden Behind the Music Stand, which is available in our online shop, which can be accessed either on our website or our Instagram page. So
yes. And if you don't have any of this hand sanitizer, you should go buy some. Mm-hmm. I'm already halfway through the hand sanitizer. I use it all the time. I love it. I've got the orange. I've got the
I don't remember
balsam fir.
Do you like the scents? I just kind of guessed.
Oh no, I'm crazy about them. And then other people will smell it when I use it, and they're like, "Oh my god, what is that?"
Right.
And
so you got the hookup.
That's right. And then I tell them about the podcast.
Thank you, Ari. Yeah, that's great. Oh, and Ivo's fashioning it over Zoom for us right now.
Me as well. Lemon rosemary eucalyptus. Mm-hmm. I think I like the eucalyptus better.
Interesting. Okay.
Like I'm at a spa.
Okay, good to know. Good to know.
Yes. But that's lemon rosemary's easier on the nose.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Depending on your preference.
Sure. Yeah. So I also really wanted to include some fall foliage in your boxes. But, you know, ironically, normally I would have had fall foliage on the ground so I could have put some in there. But it's been unseasonably warm in the Twin Cities. So it's only now starting to fall. You know, there's actually leaves on the ground now. And this is...
That's wild.
Yeah, it's wild. And like our first snow was maybe a couple weeks ago, which is usually it happens within October or something. So anyway. It's just thank you, but no thank you, global warming kind of thing. You know, it's like this double-edged sword for us Minnesotans. Like, I don't mind having a warmer fall, but at the same time, the cause is not great. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's been warm out here, too.
Yeah.
Right, Ivo? We've been getting a bit of rain, right?
Right. Like, especially this summer, too, right? It's supposed to be so cold, and it seemed pretty mild this time around.
Oh, okay.
You know?
For sure.
Not so many frozen SF days. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Right. And more recently, too, Roasty, for sure.
Yeah. So I'm sorry I couldn't include any fall foliage for you guys, but it's really beautiful here right now.
It's okay. We've got our gourds.
Oh, awesome.
It's okay.
Yeah, I love the gourds.
The gourd. Oh, thank you. Yeah, you brought the little pumpkin. Yeah, that's also courtesy of the same apple orchard that we went to, Afton Apple Orchard.
Very nice.
Yes.
Cute. Anyway. Normally, I talk about how I've met each of you individually, but I want to hear how you guys met each other.
Oh, wow.
That's
okay.
A good question.
Wow,
I know.
I have to go way back into my memory here. Mm-hmm. I think we probably met in school, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then, but since then, we've done many gigs together, I think. And we've carpooled many times. You know, I think we did a long run of the Nutcracker together down in San Jose, actually. Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, I feel like you're one of the alums from the conservatory that I got to know better afterwards. you know, like, yeah, we went to school together and met there, but I feel like I've seen you more afterwards or got to know you better, you know, say through like our mutual friend Esther, who is, you know, was also a guest on the podcast.
Yes, past guest.
Yes.
Also, so, Brass Over Bridges.
Exactly.
Oh, yep. Right. Yeah. Part of the quintet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. No, it's always nice to run into Evo on gigs. Yeah. Good carpool buddy.
Yes. Likewise. Yeah. It's just funny how that goes for me. That's unusual. Like, you never know who you're going to end up seeing more of afterwards, like,
right,
whatever, 10 years later, right. Yeah, just, yeah,
and certain people like it more. I mean, I guess we are talking freelancing, right?
On
eventually. Yes. But yeah, I mean, certain people get into certain circles a little bit more, and if you're just like ever so slightly, you could be doing the exact same thing, but if you're just ever so slightly outside of that person's like circle of context, you like never see them. It's really weird. Right. But if you're in that circle, then you see them all the time. So I don't
know. So yeah, y'all are in each other's orbits right now.
That's right.
Yep. Well, we live in the sunset.
The sunset buddies. Yeah, you guys don't live far from each other either.
We're
right?
Sunset for life. Blocks. Yeah.
Sunset for life. Exactly.
Gotta love rent control, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Are you all ready for some oven roasted questions?
Please serve them up.
Okay. Cranberry sauce or gravy?
That's like asking you to choose between your children. Yeah. Like which one you love more. Yeah. Go ahead. Evo, you can be first.
Okay. So cranberry sauce or gravy? Cranberry sauce. Like when that's like really good.
Like
it's
from the can or?
No. Oh my God. Okay. Homemade. Like, blows your face off good. Like gravy, okay. I'm more like that could get a little heavy and gross. So
got you.
Cranberry sauce can be beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, for me, gravy, I have to have it on everything for Thanksgiving. Like, I think it's super essential. It sort of binds everything together.
Okay.
But yeah, just on its own, like, I wouldn't just have the gravy.
No.
So if it's like this is a desert island situation and I'm gravy or cranberry sauce, I'm going to go cranberry sauce. And I'm going to make a controversial statement on this podcast. I hope that this is an okay space for me to do
that. Yes, it's a safe space.
I'm pro can.
Okay.
Gravy. I'm pro the like gelatinous.
Yeah. You want those just,
like,
ridges.
Out, like a little brick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the ridges. I want it to be sliced very smooth.
Ocean spray to it plugging a.
I'd prefer there to not to be an actual cranberry inside
okay.
it.
Okay.
Wow.
Sounds good. Pecan or pumpkin pie?
Choosing between children again. I'm going to go with pumpkin because I just recently had a really incredible pumpkin pie. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't need to have any others. So that good.
Okay.
So it's situational. I'm just going to go off it.
Also, canned pumpkin or a real pumpkin?
Absolutely not. Yeah. Bougie. No question of it. So no cans.
No cans. Okay.
Cans are canceled.
I'm with you on the pumpkin pie. It's not Thanksgiving without pumpkin pie for me. Yeah. And I almost just, I'm indifferent as to the origins of the pumpkin pie. If it came out of a can or whatever.
You're not
picky then
when it comes to.
I feel like all pumpkin pie is good. I'd have never had a pumpkin pie I didn't like.
Gotcha. Mulled wine or spiked apple cider?
Jesus. I'm going to go with mulled wine.
Okay.
And I do.
I'm also pro mulled wine. Okay, I think it's good. Yeah.
I feel like you can have apple cider at any time in the, I guess you could have mulled wine at any, but it's like, there's something about mulled wine specifically that feels very fall-y and holiday-y and like you only really drink it with a big group of people and that kind of thing. You never like drink mulled wine by yourself.
No.
Right.
Yeah, it's too much trouble to make.
Exactly. It, right.
It seems more special. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
It's like sangria is for summer and mulled wine is for winter.
Sure.
Yeah, totally.
I've never really thought of it that way, but I think it's pretty true.
No, that's a good thought. That's a good thought. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Favorite Thanksgiving dish?
It's kind of basic to say, but the damn turkey. The turkey's like the main event.
No swearing on the pot.
I look forward. No swearing, yes. I look forward to the tryptophan every year. I just want to have so much of that.
Do you have a preference between white or dark meat?
Definitely dark. And I'm like that person that tries to get the drumstick.
Right.
If not both, it's heinous. But that can be difficult. You know, it's usually a big event. So.
Right.
I just like want to pass out. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, this will be great for a future question. But Ari, what's your answer?
It's 100% stuffing.
Yeah.
I love stuffing.
I was the, I'm the same.
You're the same
way. I love stuffing, even though it's kind of gross if you put it in the turkey. But
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't know. It's so nice to know that there's somebody else that feels the same way, but I feel like I know it's a side,
yeah.
But for me, it's like the main event. Like it's gotta be the stuffing and I'll have the turkey and I'll have everything. But I'm all about the stuffing.
Yeah. I think it's just like there are so many herbs within like the stuffing, and then you get like the drippings of the turkey, and it's just like, oh, it's
so good.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty. And there's like nothing like it. You can't really replicate it unless you make it for Thanksgiving, right? There's like no other dish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think I've had stuffing outside of Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I mean, I know you can make it, but like no one ever does.
You probably can. But...
Okay. If you were to invite any composer to our Thanksgiving table, who would it be and why?
I would say Prokofiev, just because he's become like my, I don't want to say like bestie, but just like favorite composer. And my feelings keep getting stronger the more I obsess over his music, you know? Like, I just put on the piano concerto the other day, or one of the symphonies, or like his first string quartet in particular. Anyway, you name it. It's so loony, and it just like hits me in all the right places. Like, it just appeals to me as a musician, like my aesthetic. I love everything about it. It's so colorful, fun to play, fun to listen to. It doesn't fall short in any capacity, in my opinion.
What would you ask him?
Oh my gosh. Why didn't you write a viola concerto?
Okay, fair enough. Shostakovich
did.
You already know
the answer to that.
I probably
do. Oh, snap!
Yeah. I'm going to go grab another turkey leg. Excuse me.
He didn't write a trumpet concerto either, so don't feel bad.
We all know that age-old thing, though. Like, if a composer wrote a work for viola, then they died shortly thereafter. So.
I suppose. Maybe his answer then. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
Yeah. All right, Artie, what about you?
Okay. Let's see. Well, I guess, I'm going sort of like Americana, sort of Thanksgiving, like sort of an American holiday.
Okay.
I'm going to go with either Aaron Copland or maybe like Charles Ives or something.
Okay.
Like that.
Mm. What would you ask them? Or I should say maybe why first, and then what would you ask them?
Yeah. Maybe I'll do like, let's say Aaron Copland.
Okay.
Okay. And you're asking why?
Yeah. Why would you invite him? I mean, in addition to being
Aaron Copland had some really interesting like political views on America. And I think that he had some sort of, I think that it would be interesting to dive a little deeper into his sort of thoughts on the Thanksgiving holiday.
Okay. Yeah. So you'd ask him about political things. You kind of answered both in one.
I guess. Great. Yeah. No. I mean, you could ask him about that. Yeah. I get the impression that he was like a very sort of progressive person. And I think he'd be really interesting to talk to.
Okay. Nice. Okay. Now here's this question, Ivo. If you ate too much turkey and passed out from a tryptophan overdose, what piece would summon you out from your slumber?
Oh, Enescu Octet, probably. Because it's the best. The second movement, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
That'll wake anyone up. Yep.
So the Enescu Octet is like the other Mendelssohn or whatever you want to call it. Like everyone plays the Mendelssohn Octet. But Enescu wrote a very great piece. I've only played it once, but in like a string orchestra version. But I think you said you recently played it, right?
No, like a bucket list piece. It's so bloody difficult. I mean, I don't know who would program it like or who'd want to put it together, you know, with their free time. It's a huge undertaking,
it's very dense if I remember correctly, but then it's obscene.
I think he actually, there's like a note, like a preface he wrote himself, like I indicated like which parts are prominent because he knew,
like,
already
no one's gonna understand.
It's good you compared him to the Mendelssohn, because I think he was also quite young, like around the same age when he composed it.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I forget exactly how old, but around, pretty impressive. Sure. That'll wake the dead, though, that piece. Yeah.
Okay, so for me, piece that is going to take me out of a tryptophan coma. I kind of need it to be something like really shocking. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like totally drawing. You'll edit this out,
yeah,
right?
I can.
Okay.
Although you know that these are not Spitfire questions. These are oven roasted. So you got some more time to think about some of these things.
I'm sort of really... Probably like some Messiaen or something. Something that would be like something with the birds and like very dissonant and weird. Mm-hmm. That would take me out of a trip to Fancoma.
Any piece in particular or just any of his collection?
He's got an exotic birds
piece. Yeah, right. Okay.
That's some like trumpet on it. I don't know if that's a great
one. I was thinking, what about Terry Riley in C?
Yikes.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Because it's like it's repetitive. It's like an alarm clock, like at the beginning.
Yes.
And it just keeps, this is a minimalist piece, so it like keeps going. And
so you're wanting something that's going to kind of like just gently sort of start to wake.
That's how I usually put my alarms are like that, because I don't want to jump out of my seat or my out of bed. But I mean, that's just me. But simultaneously, I was also wondering, like, what if it was the fourth movement of Mahler's first symphony, how it like starts all like rambunctious and stuff. You're like, ha! Like, caught off guard.
Oh, that could be cool. Yeah. But yeah, you, I guess you want to start sort of ease in.
I don't know. I mean, to each their own kind of thing.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay. I know this is a cheesy question, but what are you thankful for in 2021?
It's not super different from 2020, funny enough. Like, if you had asked me on the podcast, maybe. That was a bit premature, actually. But I'd say a few months after we've taped. But anyway, I think I would say I'm grateful to feel in demand or still like working quite a lot, regardless of what has happened in a way. So I feel very grateful to have that sort of, I didn't realize what I had, you know, till I lost it. And then seeing what I have, I was able to appreciate it more as it trickled back in, but also just by comparison and seeing, you know, where others may be, it's really humbling. Or I feel very grateful to have what I have now. I'd say that's the main thing. Like, yeah, could say for the work. Yeah.
Sure.
For all these opportunities.
Returning back. Yeah. I mean, that's huge. Yeah.
But also, like, it didn't all go away ever completely. There was always something, and that was encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I hear that as well. Yeah, I'm also grateful to be back working and playing and doing concerts in person and just getting to see all my musical friends again and in person. And that's really cool. I'm also just grateful to be vaccinated and be able to see my family and that people in my family are okay and that everybody's fine.
Oh,
you know, I feel really, you know, grateful for that. Yeah. Now that things are rolling again, it's also like I guess I'm grateful to have had an opportunity to change my perspective on it. And maybe Evo, you feel the same way, because you feel like you're coming back more grateful for the stuff that you're getting to do. And yeah, I definitely feel like that. And I also just don't feel half the pressure that I once felt, I think, to just keep doing the same things I was doing before. So that's really good.
Yeah, like the pressure to hustle isn't there as much. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
Because
it's healthier.
You know what it feels like to not have any gigs, and then you're like, well, I'm okay.
And it kind of turned out just fine. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, why bend backwards or like snap your neck? Like, it's fine. You don't have to play 4 gigs a day. It's okay. No shame in having a day off. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, it's almost sometimes better to have a day off and relax and, process things.
You're only playing 4 gigs a day, Eva?
I know. Slacking off.
Just kidding. Yeah, just kidding.
No, there's a time, though, when I would just be very upset. Or I would think like something was wrong, or my reputation wasn't good enough, or there'd be like some weird headspace would go
it's
off.
Not a good space.
And now I'm like, please, like, I would love like 3, 4, 5 days off. It's a big change.
Yeah, totally.
Yay.
Well, the turkey's done. Ding, ding.
Oh, good. That was fast.
The oven roasted questions are over. However, since you guys were on season 1 of the podcast, I wanted to ask you the new Spitfire questions.
Okay.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay. Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
Ravel.
Ravel.
Well chosen.
Yes, agreed.
2 for 2.
Or I'm just repeating what you're saying. I'm not sure. Just kidding.
No. Have you been listening to the questions?
I think I am.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Cats, 4,000%. Okay.
Your gasp.
Because
it was like, is that even a question?
It's not.
Appetizer or dessert?
Ooh, dessert.
appetizer.
Okay. Sparkling or still water?
Sparkling.
Still.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Get
so we're really,
here.
We're Jeez. Starting to part ways. Okay.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
No,
maybe we can't carpool.
All right. This is the fan favorite question. Alternate universe musical instrument.
Electric bass.
Okay.
Oh, my. I don't know if I have one. Oh. Is there anything else I'd like to play?
Trumpet? Don't laugh.
Okay. Well, so when I was in elementary school and we tried instruments, it was either, well, violin at the time or percussion.
Okay. So but percussion.
I don't
maybe,
know if I yeah. would want to be a percussionist like right at this moment. Alternate. But it would have been in an alternate universe, say if I had chosen
right.
to go with that.
I mean, clearly you both have chosen your chosen instruments for a reason. I mean,
yes.
So we're not trying to switch yeah. things up here, but.
Oh, totally. But yeah, electric bass. I would love
maybe
that.
Something cute like harp.
Okay.
Harp.
Totally.
I like right. the whole, you know, package.
And like carting for it sure. around and.
Oh, yeah.
You get cartage. You
That's
get
right.
cartage for.
Yeah. Early bird or night owl?
I'm a bit of it. I don't know what I am. I think I'm an early bird, actually.
Okay.
I am a night owl naturally, but I've been trying to be an early bird these days. So
okay.
Like
okay.
tan, but tans are truthfully night owl. Yeah. Even though I'm like faking it, but I'm getting up at like 7 every day, like since the summer. But
wow.
Yeah.
Pandemic still guilty pleasure.
Tiger King.
Okay.
I think it was playing video games.
Very guilty.
Okay.
I don't really have time anymore. I stopped pretty much, but I didn't talk about it on my episode, but a lot of Elder Scrolls Online, a mm-hmm. lot. Mm-hmm. That was the main game. Like I was paying money, you know, like mm-hmm. to have a membership and all that jazz.
Really?
Yeah, I logged in every day to upgrade my mount speed and like my carrying capacity and whatever else. And I had all these characters, so I had to log into like multiple profiles and play dungeons and all this. Yeah, it was a lot.
Oh my gosh, wow.
But definitely guilty pleasure because it's like I wasn't.
You had fun with it.
I did. It became a routine after a while. But, you know, again, like as life took over, it kind of phased out. But it was definitely a guilty pleasure because I was like, oh, this is like, I'm just doing this all day. Like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be.
Much time again right. to play video
yeah.
games.
Right. You know, this reminded me, I should have put this earlier in the introduction. But so I actually came and visited you guys in San Francisco last mm-hmm. May.
Right.
And I was so grateful that I stayed with Evo for a bit of it. And this mm-hmm. was because I had... It was at that moment when I sliced my finger and injured myself, so I couldn't right. play cello yes. for about 3 weeks. So I got some plane tickets and then came and visited San Francisco for a bit. So in a way, it's like, and that's when I remember you showing me about Elder Scrolls. You're like showing me all your characters and all these things. So that's why it sparked my memory. But
yeah.
to me, it feels like we're just catching up only maybe, what, a few months ago, rather than really the last time we had our episodes together, just so that the audience kind of knows, like we've actually
oh, totally.
Hung
yeah.
out. Yeah.
yeah, we've seen each
yeah.
other. Yeah, since that
yeah.
time. Yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
As a side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a fun
yeah.
time. Yeah, that was a,
so random.
It was a birthday party, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we got to do a big photo of all of the
yep.
hiding behind the music stand alumni.
Yep.
That
That's
were there.
Right. I like how you call them alumni as if they graduated.
Kind of. Right?
Totally.
Okay, and this is the last question of the ones that are different from season one to season two. Desert island piece of any genre?
It's going to be the one piece on the island. That's tough. I'll probably take some, like, I don't know, I really like Bill Evans or something. Maybe like one like Bill Evans recording or something.
Okay, I'll allow
it. Can it be an album? Like a band.
Oh, is this an album? Oh, I'm messing.
Or like one.
That's
piece.
Where I was like, I'll allow it. It was supposed to be one piece, but that's fine.
One piece.
Okay, maybe one. What about like one song?
Oh, just one song. That's brutal.
That is brutal.
That's why I said I'll allow it. Like I was trying to be nice.
Okay. Then I'll accept your kindness. And I was gonna say like maybe something like it. Just it's very meaningful to me. But like maybe the Smashing Pumpkins Adore album.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe my favorite of theirs, and they were my favorite band growing up as a kid.
Oh yeah.
And that is like their kind of their darkest album in my opinion. It's kind of the black sheep because they got rid of their drummer and there was
I don't know if I know Adore. Is that like are there a lot of big songs on that, or is that kind of
it had a couple singles. Yeah, like
okay,
Ava Adore, perfect. But I don't think it did as well commercially as like Melancholy just before it, the giant double album that's like legendary. Siamese Dream 2 is pretty great.
A couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they came to the Twin Cities and it was great.
I love Siamese.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. Too.
I just love Adore.
I've been actually listening to them in the car lately. Yeah.
Adore is just so, you should definitely listen to it if you haven't yet. It's just, it's very dark. Yeah, it's just a beautiful album.
Okay.
Lots of heavy topics. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good for a desert.
It is.
Where you're like all alone.
Exactly. You either have to decide, like, are you going to embrace that feeling entirely?
Yeah.
Or are you going to listen to music to distract you from those feelings?
Like escapism, or do you need to like be in the present with that music, right?
Yeah.
That is a very interesting notion. Yeah, yeah, because I don't know. Yeah, you wouldn't want to fight it the whole time that you're on the island. Have something like really upbeat.
Yeah, that would get really annoying.
It might be kind of weird.
Yeah,
it could be annoying.
It would.
Anyway, I mean, we don't have to keep like... This can spiral out of control if we
That's
go too
right.
far.
Yeah, let's get off
yeah,
the island.
Let's get off this island. Okay, so.
Spitfire Island.
You have complete. Fire Island. It's the hell of like. Patty just keeps asking all the Spitfire questions, like, stop. Anyway, well, you finished the Spitfire questions and the oven roasted questions. So, congratulations to y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I wanted to catch up with you guys about your outside interests. Evo, how has your sense of fashion and aesthetic changed since your episode?
I guess the quickest way to put it is I've upped the ante because after I did the episode with you, I listened back, of course, like several times probably. And it just kind of struck me.
I'm just kidding.
Yes, all the views are me. Yeah, no, it could be. Who knows?
No.
I just felt like, oh, I don't actually have as many pieces as I think I do, or like things to show off or things to feel proud of in my collection or the whole journey itself. You know, like I started kind of being a bit hard on myself, you could say. So yeah, I took that episode kind of as motivation or inspiration to push things further, you know?
I mean, I think that's kind of interesting, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if I'm going to talk about this, then I need to actually be doing it, or like, I need to be the real deal, you know? That's
sure.
kind of how I saw it.
Well, I mean, I think you were the real deal, but I mean, for yourself, you wanted to continue the journey.
Yeah, I think something else I could do better is maybe showcase it, because I don't have a social media presence and I don't like post the pieces anywhere. It's just kind of like if someone happens to see me at a gig, they'll see whatever the hell I bought that week, but that's about it. Like, it's kind of private. So yeah. Maybe it would be fun to put it out there more, like for future goals. I don't know, but
that could be cool.
Yeah, but it's definitely been inspiring, like, to go further with.
So how many more pieces do you have?
Oh, I don't know. That's actually scary. I have not counted. It's just a very organic process. Like, if something catches my eye. I started buying a lot more things from The RealReal, which is this website where you can buy high-end designer clothing. Mostly accessories, all sorts of things as well. You know, for less. But it's still horrendously expensive. So you have to kind of be careful. It can get ugly. But now I have some really fun pieces, like some Gucci, Alexander McQueen, Givenchy, like just really fun, beautiful stuff, and not black. You know?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what you're like, talking about. Yeah.
Some branching out. I don't know. I don't know how specific I should get, but. Yeah.
Well, are there anything very similar to like Sad Pants at all?
I guess you could say that. So there's a pair of Gucci like track pants that are metallic green.
Oh.
Like, they're just ridiculous. And I just wore them the, like, you could say broke them in. I just started wearing them everywhere, like a week or two ago.
Do you get comments like from people?
Actually, there haven't been comments on them. But
maybe for some of your other outfits?
In general, like, people might say, like, that's really fabulous. But not to those specifically. I haven't worn them that many times, to be honest. But we'll see.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I feel like in some way I facilitated, you know, some motivation, as you say, or inspiration. So it's like, it makes my heart or warm or my cup fuller, you know, to hear that.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about your bank account.
we're all sorry about that. Yeah. It's also nice because, like, if it weren't for you, like, asking me to do that podcast, I think I wasn't even sure what the topic would be. So, like, thank you for helping me even realize that that was something notable, you know, like, worth talking about for an hour. Or 30 minutes, technically. It was, like, half of it. But it's nice to, like, realize that about yourself and put it out there.
Yeah.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah, and Ari, what about you and your creativity? I saw that you have some new videos out, and how many subscribers do you have on YouTube at this point? Did you make it to 20? Did you do it?
I'm at 30.
Yes!
Oh my God.
Yes.
Congratulations, dude.
Yeah, I'm up to 30 now. Evo, are you subscribed?
I am not. I don't think I...
Okay, I gotta put you on the spot here.
I can do that.
Are you gonna do it now on the podcast?
Oh no, I don't want all the things that are open to crash, but I will make a note of it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, no problem.
In my memo pad here.
Everyone's hearing you say that, promised me.
I will also hit the notification bell.
Oh my.
Don't worry.
Yeah, that's too much.
I know it is. To go that far.
Yeah, I've been doing some more stuff, doing some more writing. Yeah, I put out a couple new videos, and I'm trying to think of the last time I was here. Yeah, so I did one back at home when I was with my parents in Iowa, just like on the farm. And my dad's a visual artist, so I was like in his studio, and it was fun to get to put some of the stuff that he's working on in that video. And we collaborated on that. He helped me make the video and everything.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just super fun, and been doing some other stuff like that. Got a piece for quintet that's kind of in the works right now, and we just did a reading.
Okay.
Yeah, brass quintet thing, and we just read through some of it, and so I'm kind of going back over and making some edits, but some things in the works.
That's awesome. Are you finding any other ways of finding inspiration, or like is anything else like just inspiring that or sparking that interest or in any way?
Yeah, I guess that the last few things that I've done have been, there's been some inspiration coming from nature. So I did the last video was a lot of video that I shot just around here, Golden Gate Park. And yeah, I've been like walking a lot. So I just I walk a good amount every day. And I feel like that just sort of does something to you. It kind of gives you a different sort of lens on the world. I'm also reading a really great book about nature right now. It's The Overstory. Have you heard about The Overstory?
No.
It's an awesome book. It's a really awesome book, but it's about trees and kind of their interconnectedness with people's lives.
Okay.
So I thought,
who's the author?
It's Richard Powers.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a great book. Really great book.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah,
trees are great. Yeah. On that note, are y'all ready for a break?
Oh
yes, let's take five.
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So with these spectaculars or these panel discussions, I like to bring in a topic that is maybe something that we can go deeper in rather than my normal episodes where we talk about the way that you've discovered classical music in your careers. So today I thought I would love to have a conversation about what actually more or less is what the music career looks like, which is freelance work and entrepreneurialism within that. And there's not one person in music that has ever escaped any kind of gig or any kind of, you know, at some level, we've all done the freelance work. So I guess I just wanted to get to dive deep into it and talk about specifically, though, in San Francisco, you know, since we all experienced it ourselves while either we were at the conservatory or as you both now live there, I think it's also a good template for what that looks like for a major city. So as much as today's conversations are going to be specific to the San Francisco Bay Area, I think this translates and I can facilitate some of those conversations to any major city with their variations that applies to those cities. So I guess starting off by talking about freelance life essentially means that you are not hired by a specific entity that is paying your paycheck. So like you're not part of a major symphony orchestra or you're not on faculty at a major university. diversity of some sort. And that's, I feel like I'm not saying this right, because that's not really true.
No, you're saying it. I think you're saying it absolutely right. Like, when I think about freelancing, I think it's like a patchwork of different types of gigs and not one of them being your full-time job. And so there's different varieties of that, but...
Yeah, maybe that's the best way of putting it, is that it's a bunch of part-time jobs smashed together to create a full-time job versus, let's say, someone in the San Francisco Symphony, that's a full-time job. And if they decide to do teaching or decide to do other gigs, that's supplementary to their income versus for freelancers, that is a portion of their income when they do that kind of work. So just to clarify what even freelance means. So oftentimes, as I was just saying, though, I was kind of starting to doubt myself, because oftentimes that does include some of that work. It does include performing with regional orchestras and even having positions in those orchestras, or it does involve being on faculty at colleges. Like Ari, you are on the faculty at Sacramento State University. So that's not like it's exclusive from those jobs, but it's just different.
Right? For sure.
So I'll start by asking about freeway fill. I've mentioned this term before, but I feel like it specifically refers to the San Francisco area, but I have heard this term be used in other cities as well. So what is the freeway fill?
So when they say freeway fill, I think it means that the orchestras that you drive to that are on the road in smaller towns, sort of in the orbit of your major city. And I'm sure that even in Minneapolis, you have something that resembles that, some other small regional orchestras that are sort of around that people drive to. And none of those orchestras are full time, really. So it's all part of that sort of
ecosystem. Or you end up being what's called ringers, as in paid professionals for certain orchestras. Oftentimes, orchestras don't have a full staff of orchestral members. In the string section, for example, they may have maybe hired 4 cellos, but then they outsource these freelancers who travel to their orchestra and play with them. And so for freeway fill, I think the term is coined that because you spend more time on the freeway than you do in rehearsals.
Yeah, you definitely can. Yeah, it can be a lot of driving.
I can give an example, at least in the Twin Cities. A lot of my friends who do this kind of work, they travel to Duluth, which is about a 2-hour drive north of us, of the Twin Cities. They drive to Sioux City, which is about 3 or 4 hours south. They might drive to Sioux Falls, which is, I think, around the same time. They even have driven down to Omaha, which is 5 to 6 hours, I believe, or La Crosse is about 2 to 3 hours. So it's similar, at least in the Twin Cities. In San Francisco, I mean, you guys often drive to Sacramento, which is, I mean, that's about how long of a commute, Ari? 2 hours.
It's 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
just did that
and
today.
Evo, you drive to San Jose, which is a little bit closer, but...
Yeah, like an hour-ish, a little less, yeah.
So, I mean, do you guys ever get fatigued from doing that work?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, a lot of, driving is hard. Yeah, so I think that there's a whole, you know, balance to that. What do you think, Evo?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's grueling, and you don't think about it, actually. Like, I mean, I don't notice sometimes how it may affect me. I'm just trying to get to the rehearsal or whatever, or the concert, and you don't realize how you might already have spent quite a bit of your gas, or that literally not just in the car, but your own gas tank on the journey, and then you can't like focus or do your best.
Well, and also,
and sometimes they overlap. You don't get a break. Like, there's many weeks where sets will just start, another one is finishing, another one begins, and, you know, you're already just trying to get to the rehearsals. Like, sometimes there's triples, it works out so that you can rehearse, like, you know, 2 rehearsals with one group, and then, like, go play a concert with another one. And so, different programs, different people, commutes, of course, the traffic can get ugly. Even if it's not as far as some of the Minnesota commutes you mentioned, hour-wise, we can get really bogged down, like, just to get like
traffic
40 miles, 30 miles, you know, away from home base.
Right. And traffic in the Twin Cities or in these areas is definitely not like the traffic in the Bay Area. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it could be the same amount of time for maybe a longer distance kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Exactly. Now, I was going to add, like, I don't think I said this when we did my episode, but like, I know we talked about freeway fill briefly, but I think the main thing these days, I actually choose, I have to decide if I can make it to the gigs. Like, that's the number one thing. I actually check if I can. I've been turning down quite a lot of work because I can't make it.
Yeah.
It's just not possible with the traffic.
Right.
Even though, like, when you see the times, you know, you could theoretically, but it's just getting harder.
Well, yeah. And I want to point out that in our business, it's unprofessional to show up on time, in a way. You have to show up at least 15 to 20 minutes before rehearsal time. So in addition to even showing up at the bare minimum of that amount of time for these orchestras, you also have to add in commute time, and you also have to add in possibilities of either getting lost or possibilities of traffic, which is often traffic or accidents that happen.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's a whole level of calculation. Like Eva was saying, like, oh, can I make it to that? But it's like planning out when you're going to leave. And I try to mitigate as much commute stress as possible. So I'm always like erring on the side of a little extra early and that sort of thing. But even that, like, that just eats up more of your time.
Exactly.
So
right.
That's always something to think about.
Yeah. You could be spending that time doing some kind of self-care for yourself, or you can have the assurance of being on time and be hired again. Right. That's like kind of a high emotional kind of toll there. So, I mean, that's just one facet of freelance work. Another one, which is huge, especially for string players, are weddings. It's such a huge industry for us. I don't know, Ari, I don't know about your experience with weddings.
Yeah, trumpet gets hired for weddings. I've done a fair amount of weddings, but I don't think I've done quite, there's much more of a circuit, I think, for the string wedding thing, especially around here with like Napa and like outdoor weddings. People just want a string quartet. I've even heard about people hiring like a solo violist for an engagement party. They wanted just solo viola.
Careful
for
what
some
you
reason.
Wish for, yeah. My goodness.
I don't think they knew that a viola was like not a violin. I don't
wouldn't be the first time, yeah. Yeah, wedding gigs are like the one thing that kind of didn't stop either in the pandemic.
Right. People
they
are still
just
getting
kind of peppered in. Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes in a wedding gig, you also have to show up early on time for these things. They can be at these random places, maybe a winery or some church, or maybe you also have to consider finding parking. It's like that's also always going to be part of the calculation too. But even so, like you might even at the venue have to deal with things like, of course, a bridezilla, but outside of a bridezilla, you might have to deal with maybe sitting outside without any cover, or it's too hot or it's too cold. And we have to advocate not just for ourselves and our comfort, but also for our instruments, because our instruments don't handle extreme weather very well. Again, I don't know about, I'm sure a trumpet's a little bit more, it's forgiving.
It's fine. It's fine. Okay. All weather, really. It's mainly
right, okay, so,
me.
So this is a specifically string problem, or maybe our harp problem or guitar problem. But I've definitely been at gigs where it was in a contract saying that we were going to get shade and that was not provided. And so therefore we had to kind of turn down the gig on the spot because we couldn't play and they weren't accommodating for us. And I mean, of course, that makes us look bad. But I mean, we just can't risk our instruments getting damaged in that way because there's more gigs out there for us to play. And I'm sorry, but this one is not worth it if you're not going to accommodate, kind of thing. So there's oftentimes that struggle, and particularly with weddings, but this can also happen with a lot of other gigs. There's also sometimes the struggle of even getting paid for the gig. So sometimes you show up to, let's say, a wedding and there's you have a contract and it's promised some money, but after you do the prelude, you do the ceremony, you do the cocktail or whatever, and you're ready to go, there's no one there with the check to give you for your time. And you have to even hound down sometimes people to get the money, which seems like, you know, almost like, why is that the case? Like, why is it almost expected that we are to play music for free, right?
Yeah, it's I mean, all of those logistical things are, I mean, and I think that this is partly why I can't really speak for the string world, but I think that it's partly why there are certain contractors in the string world that do a lot of weddings and certain contractors that basically just don't do any, because the ones that do it a lot come up with these really sort of sturdy systems and ways of like making sure that everything kind of flows to plan, because the wedding has so many logistics associated with it that if you don't, you know, what's good prelude music, what's this or that, or how do you stop as a group, and it really helps to have somebody have already figured all of that out.
Well, I was just going to add, like, I guess maybe I'm lucky or count myself lucky, but yeah, at this point in my career, I play for several contractors, so I'm never the one that has to deal with these things, you know, like get the money, or I don't even have to lead. It's extremely rare that I'm like the one placed in charge mm-hmm. of the quartet or trio or whatever it is.
Yeah, usually it falls on the first violinist or something.
Yeah. It just depends on like who the regulars are. If like it's happened sometimes that it's been me because the other players are all like first timers or subs or people mm-hmm. that don't normally play. But yeah, just at this point, I know what good rates are. I don't really play the gigs that get a little more sketchy or where you have to deal with those things yourself. I have in the past, of course, like, mm-hmm. you know, if you could say cut my teeth doing that. But
yeah. Right. If it's like a gig that is lower paying, usually you are going to run into more of those logistical issues, and you are going to run into not being taken care of in other ways outside of just the finances of it. Like the gig maybe doesn't pay as well, and you also don't have that shade structure, and you know, there's like a laundry list of things that might come up. So yeah, I think that starts to be like if you've freelanced a lot or if you've gigged, it starts to be kind of like a little like that's the first thing that you hear about is like how much something mm-hmm. pays usually, and so you kind of it just mm-hmm. makes you aware.
I don't know
of that.
If this is okay to say, like, but I find that at this point, again, I just know who's who in that wedding gig scene, at least. Even like the freeway fills, I weigh my options, and it's not necessarily what it pays. Like it can be the commute, it can be the people. The regulars,
I'm with
and
you there.
Just stack them up, and then you decide. Because I basically have to choose between two or three things most of the time, mm-hmm. like every given week. I don't just have one thing and I'm done. I have to kind of, which one is best for me? And that could be very different things that given week, like best for me, like mentally, mm-hmm. most prestige, most fulfilling musically, best financially. It's just a crapshoot sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's surprising what I go with. Depends.
Totally. Yeah, those are interesting. Those are the variables of performing in general. It's like, you know, maybe the thing that doesn't pay that much, but is like really, really fulfilling with people that you really want to play with. Like, you know, a lot of times for me, that's going to win out. You know, even if it's like, I don't think it's possible to just go off of the dollars and cents. I don't want to say it's not about that, but it's not, mm-hmm. it's kind of not about that, right?
Well, and this also just brings up, I was going to get to this point, but I'm going to bring it up now. It's so important, and it shows, because of what you guys were just saying, how much your reputation matters as you choose and how you choose to behave or the choices you make along the way when you are starting to become a freelancer in whatever city you are in. Because of course you can relocate to another city and start fresh by some means, which is hard, but in some ways it might give you a new opening for more possibilities. But of course you guys have lived in San Francisco for many years, and as Evo you're saying, like you even know like what to expect from certain people. So it just does prove that like wherever you go and whatever you say or however you act, how you treat people really matters, because that means either you're going to get hired for stuff more likely than someone else, or you're going to be able to play with people that you enjoy more.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, you always want to be, but this sort of applies to like, I mean, in life in general, like we want to be the people that are positive, that don't cut other people down, are like, you know, really sort of bringing value and adding. We all want to be that, not even outside of freelancing or music in general. I feel like we all want to be that kind of person that, you know, shows up and whatever it is, like they make the situation better, you know, or whatever, you know, it could be not even a musician or just like someone with a job or whatever. Like, and so, yeah, it does matter for your reputation, and it is important mm-hmm. for that as well too.
Yeah, you have to be a pleasure to work with. And I've found that my reputation's the reason I have everything I have. It's not because I sound like Kim Kardashian as a joke, but I don't sound, you know, I'm not like God's gift to viola, let's put it that way. But I'm reliable because like I show up. Somehow that's difficult to accomplish, or respond to emails in a timely fashion, apparently also difficult to accomplish. I mean, there are violists out there, like, I don't know if this is too transparent, that could play circles around me, but they can't get it together. Like they can't be on time to the gig. They can't respond. I don't know, they're too busy being amazing. I don't know what they're doing, but they don't get called back. Mm-hmm. And I've slowly just, I'm like, what is it? Like that analogy of like that sticky, like ball rolling and picking everything up. And now mm-hmm. I'm like enormous. And then these people that are quite incredible players don't have the work because they screwed up. So yeah, it is the most important thing.
Right.
I feel like I'm living proof of that. It's all reputation. You have to play well, of course.
Right.
But like, it's almost more important what you're perceived as.
Or as you say, logistically, yeah. how you communicate.
You have to be really organized and
communicator
on top of it.
Yeah.
And then you'll just start getting gigs from people that can't do those things, mm-hmm. basically.
In some ways, it's kind of an easy formula, but at the same time, it can be really punishing if there's a misstep somewhere or if you're habitually mm-hmm. making missteps, I think, you know?
Yeah.
There's pressure. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure and thought sort of pressure about, yeah, I mean, just all of the different decisions that you have to make. Yeah, there's a lot yeah. of pressure on it, I think.
Well, before I bring up a huge other side of our freelance income, I just wanted to briefly bring up, especially in San Francisco, there is a busking scene. And primarily, though, that's something that you do when you're maybe younger or just starting out. Mm-hmm. I used to do it when I was in the conservatory. I know Ivo used to do it. I don't know if Ari, if you used to.
Yeah, because I did a little bit. I did a little yeah. bit. I've done a little bit of busking.
Yeah.
I haven't done a lot of it.
There's and that's where it might be slightly San Francisco specific in the way that it is actually kind of available for anyone. I know that in New York, it's a little bit, you have to get permits or there's like certain levels of that you have to go through. But yeah. with San Francisco, you can kind of go to essentially any subway stop and sit there mm-hmm. and play music, or you can just sit right. on the street and play music and, you know, hope for people to contribute as you're playing. So I just wanted to bring that up as also a small way and maybe sometimes a fast cash way of making money. But I mean, again, that's maybe at the earlier stages of you as a freelancer, not necessarily at like our level now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, there's all kinds of different musicians that make that into, some people do that. Their whole thing mm-hmm. is doing the busking thing and they have like a good routine worked out. Yeah, it can be really good for some people. I think that it probably also has like a lot of freedom too. You really get to work for yourself as far as that goes. And it's a thing. There's a lot of street mm-hmm. musicians around here.
Which I do think is actually kind of awesome as a overall thought of, yeah, just having music
cool
everywhere
yeah.
and available yeah. and people are
right.
are actually able to make a living off of it. And it might be hard work, but it is possible. It's not taken for granted.
Oh, yeah. There's creative stuff. Yeah. There's interesting
yeah.
things
so,
happening. Yeah.
Just to put a little, you know, positive spin on it as well. It's people are enjoying the music and it is brightening people's day even for a moment and a moment of a commute or something that they weren't expecting.
Absolutely.
And so at least for me, the final one before I get into the entrepreneurial side of what we do is teaching. A huge part of if someone chooses to is to build a teaching studio. I know, Ivo, you don't have a teaching studio. And I'm saying teaching is not for everyone either. And I know that for you, you've found that out for yourself that you don't enjoy teaching. And so you primarily do all the other things I was just saying. So Ari, maybe you can fill us in a little bit about what that's like to build a teaching studio.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm teaching at a school and I'm teaching like band there, like part-time teaching band. And then I'm teaching private students at Sac State. And then I have like one other private student. So I don't have, there have been times when I've had more private students, but I've never had a private studio as mm-hmm. as sort of my main thing. It's always
like
been kind of these other jobs that I would, yeah, where I would get more students and stuff. I think that the private studio thing can be really great if you can really optimize it and you can have a good, really good sort of contract in a way of like, you know, just ensuring your income. My issue with it was when I was starting out, I would have these students and, you know, at a certain point, like maybe they're not practicing or something, the parent starts to think, well, they didn't really practice this week. Maybe mm-hmm. we should just hold off on the lesson. And that source of income starts
right.
to become a little bit unreliable. So I think the people that do really well with the private teaching stuff set up a really good system and, you know, either they are getting paid at the beginning of the month and are really just sort of organized and have thought about all of the sort of ways that, you know, things can kind of shift throughout the year for mm-hmm. students. They get busy or whatever, but you want to make sure that you're still, you know, like basically they're signing on with you.
Well, and also what's slightly, like I mean, that. It makes sense from a parental perspective if, oh, well, if my child didn't practice this week, then why pay for a lesson?
Yep.
But the problem is if that becomes habitual, then they will never learn. But then B, right. yeah, they do need that reinforcement every week from their teacher. So, and then I would say the third issue is that then the, as you say, the stable income becomes less stable. I think though that, as you say, like there's ways to build your studio, and maybe this will be a side other topic I might have on the podcast with another panel, but there are ways of building a studio that is more or less, what's the right word? That's a great word.
Sustainable. Yeah. Like can really ensure and also, your income.
And also the knowledge like and health of the students too, of, you know, of having them learn music, right? That's
absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. You can, and this is where I'm at with like all of my teaching right now, is that like the more effective I can be for my students, the more effective mm-hmm. I can be for myself. And like, it really does go both ways. If the students are engaged and having a great experience, I'm also like having a great experience. And a lot of that comes down to like the structure of things and setting, how do you set the expectations? Like they know that they need to be there on time. They know that, you know, just little things like that, where it's not really like fun. Like I love to just like, oh, be in the flow of a lesson and we're having fun, but I don't really like to be like, you know, it's really important that you are on time. Like I hate doing that, but you have to set that in order to be able to really relax mm-hmm. and enjoy the other stuff.
Yeah. And I know that there's also, as you say, like you are attached to schools. You can also create your own private studio, which often is what a lot of people end up doing. And that's almost sometimes their full-time job in ways. They have 25 or
for sure.
more plus students, and it's a really solid way. And also, I think it's really important work. I mean, we are all products of a private teacher at some point.
Totally.
Again, maybe this will be a complete other topic on another panel, because there's a lot more to that than I can cover in today's. Before I start talking about some of the entrepreneurial things that we can do as freelancers, I do want to say I'm recognizing that my tone overall of talking about this so far has been relatively negative or very realistic, let's maybe put it. So I do want to say, despite all the realistic facts of what it is like to be a freelance musician and things to watch out for, things to take into consideration, I want to take a moment and say, what are some of the positive things about being a freelancer? Why do we choose this life for ourselves?
Yeah, I think that it, you know, the notion of a freelance musician is, it's a way of describing something that fits in with how we talk about other jobs. Like, oh, I'm a freelance writer, or I'm a freelance designer, or I'm a freelance
architect.
Something else. Freelance architect. You know, it's like, it's just sort of a way to take the career of music, which is complicated and maybe off the beaten path for the majority of people who are like, most of the people that I meet or whatever, they're like, musician, right. Well, what do you do? Well, what do you
or
do?
Or no, it's kind the of question like, is, what like symphony? And are so, you part of the symphony? Or what symphony do you play? Like, right? It's always that. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. The freelancing or the notion of being a freelancer is just, in my opinion, it's just a way of describing something. But at the end of the day, it's just like you're a musician, you know? And so you do concerts or you teach and or you do a wedding gig or you do this or that. You know, it's like you're doing all of the work that is the work of being a musician. And yeah, that's what I think, that we're summarizing something that's kind of just like mm-hmm. being a professional musician.
Did you want to say something,
Evo? Yeah. It's okay. Like codifying it or just putting it in the box, like, or so people could wrap their heads around the part-time aspect.
But to get back to your point about like, yes, I'm so sorry. I was saying
that part-time aspect of it, or like people with their 9-to-5s can't understand, you know, so they have to put some label on it or have to understand it in that way.
But if you are a freelancer and you're doing more of a sort of varied career, I mean, I think one of the main positives is the flexibility, and that you are, you know, throughout your career, you're going to be able to make a lot of choices about your performing. And, you know, sometimes you're going to be choosing to mm-hmm. do certain types of things. And sometimes you're going to mm-hmm. choose to do something different. And it's all going to be a part of the same sort of career. And, you know, in a way, it sort of makes the fact that you don't have a full-time job, it makes some of those decisions a little bit easier because you don't have to say, wow, do I want to give up this thing where I play 4 shows a week and I get paid really great? And, you know, it's like you don't have to give up on that to like do something else for a little while, or you can move around. You can be a little more flexible mm-hmm. with the things you do.
Yeah, I think that's a really actually great point, because if you're attached, let's say, to a university or a symphony or even a string quartet, I experienced this too. Personally, I always have to put the quartet schedule first. And there's times where I've had to turn down some really interesting gigs because it conflicted with the quartet. And I mean, and if you can imagine, then also with a symphony member, they have to show up to rehearsal every, you know, they get a set schedule for the year, but still, you know, they are still tied to that. And there's a lot of other opportunities that pop up that they might not be able to participate in. So the flexibility, and also it feels almost right. like as if you can be a free agent for yourself. You can pick and choose the things and opportunities that you want to do.
Definitely. Yeah. It's a lot of, yeah, opportunity to switch gears or, yeah, change your focus a little bit. You do have commitments. Yeah. I mean, like, I think Evo, you probably have right. contracts and stuff, and you have to make a certain minimum.
It does get a little hairy.
For
yeah.
your contract.
And this year has...
Yeah. Oh, that's probably hairy too. Yeah. With just like making sure that you mm-hmm. can make all of your minimums.
And there's a couple of, like, I mean, now that things are returning, there's more vacancies in some of the groups. So like I've ended up with a couple of surprising contracts, you know, like 1 year sub positions. And suddenly I have more contracts to make the minimums on. And it just, yeah, it changed my schedule dramatically. And then I had to pull out of some things because at the time I was like, well, this is the only orchestra calling me 6 months ago. But now, bam, it's all back. But I was going to say there's something also like with the flexibility part. It's also been really organic, like the whole freelance life. I never felt like I was forcing anything to happen in my career. It just was almost falling into my lap. There's a flow to it, you know, and just again, the passage of time and being consistent and reliable and staying here and just making it work. I feel like there's a reward, you know, or like I can see the tangible evidence mm-hmm. at the end of all of this time I've lived here. So there's also something about that, if that makes sense, to just say it's organic. It just never felt like, I don't want to say like not like hard work, because of course it is. You're always working really hard and hustling, but I don't feel like I'm desperately searching for it. I never felt that way mm-hmm. here. Like I just realized there were all these orchestras to play in the Bay Area and wine country up north for all the wedding gigs. And it's just a fantastic place to live. And it's easy to thrive here, I find. Yeah, the cost of living is ridiculous, but you know, there's a lot of work.
Well, and that's, I know what we're saying in San Francisco, we're talking specifically, and that's true, but I can say that as well in other cities, that is also mm-hmm. the case. And that when you brought this point up, Ari, a second ago about when people ask you what you do and you say freelancer just to make it a easy answer for them, or when I even pointed out, oftentimes they say, oh, what symphony do you play with or whatever? That is a limited view of what the demand is for our field in the community. I mean, music is constantly being asked for all the time. And so therefore all the musicians have to fill it, or there are musicians willing to fill that demand. And that to me is very hopeful and very different than how it's advertised even. A lot of times people think that classical music is dying or dead, or, you know, who's doing it anymore, that kind of thing, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, there are things, people are doing stuff, you know, and this notion of it being, it's just not true at all. It's happening. In a different sort of sphere. I mean, and that's kind of, I think, you know, I was talking before I started the podcast here about just different spheres or circles that people get into. I mean, how I run into Evo on gigs and stuff, but there are other people that I don't run into because we're in like different contracting spheres or whatever. It's the same way with music too. Like we're in the classical bubble, but there's like also like, there's a good scene, I think, in San Francisco for like indie mm-hmm. bands, or there's mm-hmm. like a good jazz scene.
Blues.
Or there's like... Mm-hmm. all of these other circles, and people stay in those circles, and people have a lot of success within those as well. So I always think that that's interesting, and I'd be interested to, like, I don't know a lot of people, I think, in San Francisco that do a lot of, I mean, I suppose Evo, you cross over and do some pop recording stuff.
That's the other thing I was going to add, like something else, like a positive to me is like when this career is good, it's really good. Like for me, like it really gets me. I feel very fulfilled by it. Or maybe this is again, personally, what does it for me. But sometimes I just have loved getting to, like, again, since it's been a year since we filmed or did the last one, it was nice to go back and just recap. I mean, I didn't know a year ago what I would be doing, you know, in another year, like what was, you know, awaiting us. But yeah, I was just like jotting some things down, and there were all these crazy opportunities just in the past year to play with, you know, some really famous bands, celebrities in different spheres. Like, I don't know, just to like list some off, like, I just don't know any other world I would get to do all of this in, you know, so keeps me going. Well, absolutely. Yeah.
And that was going to be one of my main points of the pros of being a freelance musician is that you not just do you have flexibility, but you also have variety in what you do. Like,
so much.
Maybe this is a great segue to me asking you guys, what is a surprising opportunity, gig, concert that has fallen in your laps that you wouldn't have never expected to be a part of?
Yeah, I guess I've always appreciated this. Yeah, like Eva was saying, the time was when you get to play with a band or something that's like really cool and you would otherwise like not get to play with them. Like, with Chicago a while ago. You might have done that gig too, Eva.
Yeah. I think so. Yes,
but I mean, that's the kind of thing that's like, that's just wild. And yeah, I'm just so grateful for that stuff, those opportunities that have fallen into your lap.
Yeah, like I just did, like last month, I played with the Eagles, like for their part of the California tour in Sacramento and San Francisco. I think the strangest thing was this. I got to play like for Paris Hilton. Like, I didn't know it was going to be for her, like on her reality show, her new documentary she made called Paris in Love. We did this last July, actually, but we couldn't talk about it or post anything till just the other day because it's finally out. Yeah, but they used us, like our string quartet. We just walked on to the terrace of the penthouse suite in the Fairmont, and there she was having dinner with her fiance. Carter and we played two of her songs, like covers. Yeah, she's just like loves it. You know, like, of course,
right? I mean, the Paris way.
But
yeah,
but I wasn't expecting her to, you know, like take a bunch of pictures with us and hang out. She said she played violin, actually. I didn't know that at one point.
But you're like, you chose wrong.
I suppose she did. Yeah.
It's no viola.
But that was pretty insane.
No kidding.
That's a cool gig. That's a cool gig.
I just thought we were filming for the show. Like,
yeah, like
I didn't think we'd see her. Like, I had no preparation for that.
Yeah.
She's like right there.
Have you seen
I have not watched it myself yet, but I've seen the clip that we're in. Yeah. Like, because my other friends that were on the gig were posting it. Yeah. So I have this like little clip of us. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's cute. Hopefully they'll use more of us. I don't know if that's it footage wise, but.
Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I could like add more if you want. Like, I have a few other crazy things. But just like in the past year, like we also did this huge, like, I don't think it's ever been done before, but Intel hosted this thing, like they call it Gamer Days. And they had this Twitch streamer, Dr. Lupo, come and play Overwatch while we, like a live orchestra accompanied him playing the game.
Oh, wow.
On Twitch.
Oh, weird.
Streaming. We were trying
to
like
that looks cool.
coordinate it with his game in real time.
Yeah,
like so the music matched what was happening.
Weird. Yeah, was there a conductor? Right,
that was right.
Yeah.
So that was another crazy thing we did. I think, was it Sarah Hicks? She was the conductor and she works with Minnesota,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
she was on that with us. She did a lovely job. Yeah, and it's just so crazy to get these opportunities that you just never know. To me, that's like more than enough reason to stick around.
Right.
Keep going. Like, it's just so cool.
I was just going to say.
That does it for me, the star power thing, or like these opportunities.
Yeah.
Do it for me. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, but those are great.
I'm sorry I keep interrupting you, but I just wanted to steal one of Cindy's. So Cindy Burton, past guest of the podcast. While we were roommates and while she was in the conservatory, she was hired, and I don't know if Eva, if you did this either, but she was hired to be in an orchestra for Kim Kardashian's and Kanye West's engagement.
Oh, the proposal?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't play that. It was at the ballpark.
Yes, it was at AT&T ballpark.
I heard about it.
Yeah. I mean.
Oh, that just makes me so sad to think about.
Because it worked out.
I'm joking.
ding, ding, ding.
But I mean, it's just stuff like that. I mean, of course, maybe she'll be willing to share that story in the future. But I mean, it's just like wild. When would you ever think that you would be a part of a huge couple that's now not together? Proposal that was, you know, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Yeah,
that is wild. Yeah. Some of those wedding. Yeah. Like I've never done like a celebrity wedding gig, but I've heard about them. And maybe Eva, have you done a celebrity wedding gig?
I guess I wouldn't say on like the level of, you know, we were just saying like Kim or Kanye, but I've done a couple like NBA stars, like, you know, they were just really swanky events.
Yeah.
I did one where like the bride and groom, they like featured the wedding in Vogue, but like they weren't really like that famous. It was more like just their fashion, and they're mm-hmm. more famous in gotcha. In that sense for mm-hmm. yeah, there's been some cool weddings.
Now I'm remembering I did a renewal of vows for like a former photo.
Oh, weird. Yeah,
like that's the closest just to you? Brush I've had with. I'm trying to think. There was certain. This is also a thing about getting asked for a gig that's like can be like, okay, yeah. I guess you want that. Like, I think that I played like with a jazz group out front, and then they wanted me to go out back. And because it's like a trumpet, people like, oh, you'll like signal the crowd in some way. This is the kind of like sometimes we get asked to do that. So, like, I think it was like I had to play like a fanfare, and then I had to like walk while playing around to the front to like bring people out to the front. I don't know, it was like I remember being like, okay, mm-hmm. I'll do
yeah,
it
yeah. I mean, clearly there's some really interesting opportunities that as freelancers we get asked to do that, and connections and knowing the right people in quotes, or also building your reputation, opens some of those doors to have some really interesting opportunities, right?
For sure.
I want to shift the conversation slightly to talking about what I just wrote down as startup ensembles. But I mean, like, in the sense that, you know, they are ideas, brainchilds of ours that we then put in motion and is now an established group. I mean, yes. Ari, obviously, yeah, totally. Brass Over Bridges is like your brainchild or your collective brainchild.
Yes, yeah, our collective brainchild. It's something that we put together. Yeah, I think that it's been great to do a project like that. When I first got out of school, I didn't do anything like that. And yeah, I'm just happy to be doing it. I kind of feel like I'm getting to really sort of chart the course of a project or a thing. And, you know, like we were talking about contracting or whatever, like there is that other side of it too, where there's that added labor of like, okay, well, if you're gonna go get the gigs, then you got to be the one to talk to the people that right. have the venue, and you got to make sure that everything has what it needs and that they know what the program's gonna be. And yeah, there's just a lot more back and forth. But yeah, what I, you know, with that and with just freelancing and with teaching and where I'm at with everything is I think that, you know, just trying to find the easiest, most efficient way to do all of the different things that we're doing, because it's like freelancing or building a group or having a studio. These are all like absolutely great things. And this is a totally another level, but like Yo-Yo Ma, like to a large extent, he also does right. those things. You know what I mean? He plays concerts.
Gives masterclasses.
He teaches, you know, and it's like, obviously that's like a totally another level, but you know, to some extent, like a freelancer like me can, you know, if I'm able to sort of refine my approach and make things more efficient for myself, I can sort of smooth out a lot of the rough edges that you encounter when you're doing these sorts of things, whether that's like your travel logistics or your sort of the reliability of income or different little things like that. If you can smooth them out, you can turn, you know, a very complex career into a stable and fulfilling
totally
musical life.
Yeah, and I think that's something, that's a stigma that I want to hopefully through this conversation help debunk for the listeners that might not have either known or maybe thought freelance work or freelancer musicians are, I guess, not taken as seriously. Well, I guess maybe that's it. It's clearly not true. And all the freelance musicians are very qualified, highly great players.
Well, the word freelance in general has like that sort of stigma to it, I guess.
Well, it might exist more in our realm, in our like world interconnect, like musician to musician, than it does maybe to a non-musician. But for whatever reason, there is sometimes still a stigma of what it means to be doing the work that we do and the hustle and bustle of what freelance life is. But as you're saying, like, you learned how to navigate around all this variety of work and that it can be incredibly fulfilling once you're able to learn how to juggle, essentially.
Yeah, it's also interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm on this word freelance a little bit, I guess. But it's like, if we think about it, it is in the world of classical music, but I wonder if it's really so much so in the world of like other styles of music. Maybe somebody would say they're a freelance jazz musician, or would somebody say that they're a freelance country musician, or would they say I'm a freelance indie musician? It's like starts to, I don't know, you're adding a qualification onto something that in the classical world, I think it sort of makes sense for us because it sort of establishes, okay, I'm not in a full-time orchestra. But that's almost like the only way I feel like it gets used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously kind of a undefined and troubling, you know, way of categorizing what we do.
I thought of a word, nebulous. Right. Do you like that?
Thank you, Eva.
You're trying to think of a word.
Yes, it is nebulous.
Yes. Yeah. What we do is nebulous and it's hard to describe. And I think that's where I was hoping to try to shed some light onto at least what your guys' experiences were and some of mine. I mean, I consider myself a freelancer as well, despite my main gig being a string quartet. That's a part-time job. I also work at the Minnesota Orchestra Library. I play in other groups in town. I also do a podcast. I teach as well. So, there's if there's random gigs that show up, if they work for me, I say yes. So I include myself in this camp, despite even having a stricter schedule with the quartet. Yeah. And so I think that it trying to put us in a box of what the term freelance is almost a mistake, but then oftentimes it's the easiest way to describe the work we do. But it means so much.
Yeah. There's sort of a variety to who we're working for.
And the needs that are demanded from us.
Yes, exactly. And there's a range of that. I mean, there's like all kinds of like people that play on like every big film score in LA are freelancers, or like, you know, it's like there's just a range. The word itself has very little bearing in my mind on like the musician who is doing the freelancing. It's like it's just a way to describe the variety of work that they do. They could be extremely successful as a freelancer, more so than they would be if they were maybe playing a full-time thing, or you know, it's just there's such a range.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't think about like
freelancing
how successful we are, or like the range that term encompasses. Right.
Oh, it's a huge range. Yeah,
so it's nice to be reminded. You know, even I, like, it can get me down a bit sometimes, like that label, right? When it comes from sometimes from other musicians that maybe consider themselves more, I don't know, upper crust than you because they want a job in some group. And I almost feel a little bit sorry for them because they're just trapped in that salaried position with benefits. Okay, great. But like, they don't have any freedom. And all they have dangling over my head is that little comment like, oh yeah, you do that. Okay, enjoy like your scraps. I'm gonna go play at the symphony. Like, no, actually, I think I have it better. I'm good. I don't need to play there. And the older I get, the less that bothers me that I'm not there. So that whole freelance label is like, I don't see why. But I see where it is a bit of like a put down even in our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it can be used, like pejoratively and people in our world. But I don't know if like outside of our world, if that sort of is more just like a descriptor. Right. But yeah, in our world, it can be like, I don't know. And just the way, I mean, in musicians in general, like the way that we talk about each other's work, I think that we could all be a little bit nicer. And I think it has to do with musicians kind of like feeling a little bad about themselves. And so they're like, oh, well, I don't do that. I don't do those kinds of gigs, or I don't do that kind of gig. And it's like, that's all about just sort of pumping them up. But it is unfortunate when you encounter.
No, I'm in agreement with that. Again, this was just trying to shed some light onto what, you know, our world is like and what it even is trying to define, trying to bring out the variety of what we do and also the pros and cons to it, because there's no perfect job. I mean, I'm sorry. I think it's a lie if someone's going to say that they have the perfect job and they're completely 100% satisfied. There's always going to be pros and cons. And as Eva was just saying, one job might work for someone and might not be great for another kind of thing. And we found freelance work to be really exactly what we need, which is all the things we were just saying. Variety, working with different people, working with in different environments, and having something completely new every day rather than a routine of some sort that might get a little bit boring or lackluster after a while.
For every person, like it's all up to the individual, right? You know, like what is good for you and you know, and yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So clearly this is an ever-going conversation, and this would be a long-winded episode if we just kept going. So thank you, though, for sharing your insights and experiences in your work and the hard work that you do. And I also want to affirm it by saying that you guys are doing some amazing work that are touching people's lives. Whether or not it's recognized or not, it is happening. And I think that that can be said, I guess, for any musician generally or any artist generally or any worker generally. I really could broaden that. But yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. You guys are doing such great work. And I wish I was there, kind of. Like, you know, I want to be in the carpool.
Thank you. Well, we miss you. Right. Come back and carpool with us. We'll do the next podcast from the car. That would be like a real freelance.
Right. All the phone calls from
podcast.
The cars. Yeah. All right.
I was like, musicians in cars getting coffee. Yes, gigs. Is that?
Oh man, if I was famous enough as like Jerry Seinfeld, I would absolutely do musicians in cars getting coffee with their instrument. I don't know. Anyway, I just want to do a moment to acknowledge some of your latest work and upcoming work that you are looking forward to.
Yeah, so just writing more music. Evo is going to be my 31st
subscriber
on my YouTube channel, which
thanks
I'm
for the
about.
Reminder.
But maybe those of you out in podcast land could be the 32nd subscriber.
What's your YouTube
I'd
again?
I'd love to have you.
Oh, yeah, just look you up on YouTube because you need it. Yeah,
just look up my name. That's the best way to find me. Yeah, so writing some more music and hopefully recording this new piece with the quintet soon. And quintet's doing really well. We just did a concert and we're going to do a group muse premiere of the video we recorded at the concert. So live concert recording. And looking forward to more projects in the spring.
Awesome. Nice. And tell Esther, say hi. Past guest. Yes.
I will. Eva? I will for sure.
Well, I just finished up playing. This was pretty amazing too. I finished playing with New Century.
Mm-hmm. Like Chamber Orchestra?
Yeah. We did all new music program with the former cellist of Kronos Quartet, Jeff Ziegler, who came. And did all this madness without a conductor. It was quite something. Well, he kind of ended up being our conductor because let's be real, it was it's a lot. So trying to play ratios and whatnot. So that was a really incredible opportunity just to jump in for two sets. But yeah, after like in the future, I was just like jotting stuff down, so I was ready for this. But I'll be playing with like Santa Rosa Symphony for the season. Mm-hmm. That's like one of the contracts I got. One Found Sound, of course, coming up. One of the live in-person concerts, finally. San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, Santa Cruz Symphony, and some Reno Phil. Mm-hmm. That'll take me into the new year. Yeah.
Oh, that
I haven't been back there yet.
That'll be fun. So, I mean, I remember all the times you talk about how great it is to be a part-time worker for the Reno Phil. So I'm sure you'll have a great time.
Can't wait to hotel it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a vacation. Yeah.
It is. Oh, and the other thing, just a little fun thing I wanted to add. I just came back from the Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo. I went there with my friend, good friend Tatiana, who's a violist as well. It was just like a quick, two nights. We saw one of my favorite bands, Japanese Breakfast. At the Expo Center. So that was the excuse to go.
Nice.
That was also super cool. Fun. Just to that's something I wouldn't have done before the pandemic. Like that's like a new thing. Like screw it. Let's just take the weekend off. Mm-hmm. And because I'm currently playing Opera San Jose, we're doing Purcell's Dido and Aeneas. Mm-hmm. So I took a couple of the shows off to just go there and enjoy it. I've always wanted to see it because it's so kitschy and I highly recommend it. It's beautiful. The grounds are nice,
Nice.
And the rooms are hideous. Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's me currently.
What are your Thanksgiving plans?
Mm. Oh, my parents are coming to town. Nice. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see them. And yeah, they love San Francisco. So we're going to go walk around and see a bunch of stuff. And got some friends that have some concerts and stuff that are happening. So we're going to go check those out. And yeah, it's going to be
that's
fun.
That's really nice that they get to go and visit you too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while, so yeah. I think they're really excited.
I'm going to go home. I'm just going to fly home for a couple of days.
So you're switching both. So
yes. Yeah. So Burbs of Chicago.
Ari's parents are going to San Francisco. I mean, I know your folks are in Iowa.
Yeah, no, but it's like a Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest switcheroo.
Swapping of worlds.
And it's funny because when we filmed, like I keep saying filmed, when we taped the podcast like a year ago, that's when I was like home for like 3 months. Mm-hmm. Like I've never done that. In my adult life, like it hasn't been possible to be home for like all those winter holidays. Mm-hmm. But Thanksgiving was like the start of that, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
I was there a little bit before, of course.
Wow.
Yeah. It's funny to imagine like a year later, it's like, I don't want to say back to normal, but just coming for 4 days as per usual. Like, sorry, got to work on Saturday. Bye.
Yep. Yeah, things are returning back to normal, right? As you said. Yep.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. All right. And if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day. And it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hayden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/HaydenMusicStand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is at HaydenMusicStand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, HaydenMusicStand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize a piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. Ari and Ivo, thank you so much for joining me for Thanksgiving and the Thanksgiving Spectacular episode part two, or year two. I know we just saw each other last May or June, but I mean, I always miss you guys and I hold you dear to my heart. So I hope you are going to do well and have an amazing Thanksgiving.
Thank you and happy Thanksgiving. And I'm thankful to have such great friends and to be on the podcast.
Thank you, Patty. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah.
And I hope everyone passes out. Yeah.
Will do.
Right. Just don't steal both of Evo's drumsticks of the turkey.
Yes. I'll be in the corner with my cranberry sauce.
I'm all about the stuffing. I don't even care about the turkey.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And thank you so much for listening. Say happy Thanksgiving, Sushi. People and lives. I shouldn't say touching people. Yes,
you say touching
thank you.
People's lives.
I do want to say that.
Touching people and their lives.
Yeah. No touching.
Right, no touching. Absolutely.
Okay, sorry. Just tangent for a second. So because I just watched this. So you know the no touching joke that keeps going. But then the one time that he's like decides he's like turning Jewish. And he's like touching someone and the guard's like, no touching. And he like looks over and then the guard just like sees his religiousness and like gets like disarmed by that. Do you remember that? No. This is an Arrested Development. George Sr. is like in prison and he decides to convert to Judaism.
That's right.
And then they're like, no touching. Yes. And he like looks over and he is like, you know, the music's like very like religious and pious.
Oh my god.
And then the guard's like, he's seeing a god or something. Anyway. So great.
I love that. We'll have to have an Arrested Development episode. We only talk about
That would be great. I don't know how to do that. Like calling all like on Instagram, like all past guests who like Arrested Development, would you want to and then anyway. So okay, what was I saying before?
Happy Thanksgiving.
That's not going to go in. Are you just saying happy Thanksgiving to us?
Happy Thanksgiving.